California is home to more than 55,000 foster kids. It's the largest foster population in the country. And the one place in the state where most of those kids come together is in public school. Some people argue that's where we should be putting resources to help foster kids, who often shuffle from school to school and have unstable home lives.
When you look at the outcomes for youth in foster care in terms of education and, you know, incarceration rates and mental health issues and dependency on public assistance, all of those things, when it really comes down to it, we're going to pay more in the long run for all of that rather than if we invest in them now.
That's Jatane Hart, a former foster youth and current educational mentor in Alameda County. She helps foster kids navigate school successfully. And Daniel Heimpel, director of Fostering Media Connections, works to bring political attention to what really helps those children.
We do not focus enough attention on tapping the latent potential in children in foster care. And I think a critical feature of that is our inability to really seriously focus all of our attention on ensuring they get through school.
Heimpel and Hart spoke with KALW's Holly Kernan about foster and educational reform in California.
I think that you need to find answers to the overarching problem that children in foster care are moving from home to home quite often and moving from school to school quite often. And on top of that, they are aggregating in schools that are worse off.
So they're in the lower performing schools generally.
They're in the lower performing schools generally. This is, I mean, out of Chicago, you really see a very clear percent, clear that these children are aggregating in schools that are doing poorly. So,
and that's true here in California as well.
I would imagine. I haven't seen statistics saying that.
Alameda County, that's certainly the case.
Yeah. So. So that's these are the issues.
I work with older youth, 15 to 19 in Alameda County, and I have several young women who have changed schools maybe five times since I've started working with them in May. And this is because of placement change. They're moving from Oakland to Richmond and then to Hayward. And in doing that, they're changing schools. And Alameda County is pretty good about keeping kids in their school of origin when and it's in their best interest. But the problem is public transportation, getting them to school. Yes, we have buses, but the reality is a young person at 17 is not going to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to school in Hayward when they live in Richmond.
And I've heard from young people who say, you know, I did it, but I had to advocate for myself in such a strong way. I had to show that there was a law that said I could stay at my school. I think Commissioner Sokol Mau told us about that, Daniel.
Right, of course. Yeah, I mean, Sokum's story becomes more and more famous. But, of course, the situation for him was that he wanted to go to school at Oakland High School, but he was living in a good placement in Hayward.
And he liked his placement, but he wanted to stay at his school.
Yeah, he liked his placement, but wanted to stay at his school. And so, you know, and this is very interesting in terms of if we talk about laws and those kind of things that are get a little bit esoteric, seemingly, but are important. You know, in California, we had the passage of AB 490, which focused on this issue of school of origin and school of best interest, those kind of questions. And that actually was pretty far ahead of the game for a lot of states. And so California was ahead of the game. And that influenced federal policy to start looking at this issue of, look, if there's one place where a youth can find stability, we better do our best to make sure they have that opportunity to stay in that school. Now, of course, there's other issues with transportation that Jatane is bringing up and that are going to have to be dealt with.
So what would you change if you could change the system, California?
Well, I mean, I think the major thing is to have schools really understand that it is their duty to ensure that if it's in the best interest of a kid to stay in their school district, then they should stay there. And I think it's also important. I would love to see it that we had funding. I know nobody wants to talk about funding, but you know, I would love to see funding for transportation. I don't want it to be that a kid is somewhere and he can't. There's no money to take him by bus to the school, so it's not in his best interest anymore. So those are some of the things I think are very critical. I mean, overall, I try to think about education reform through the prism of children in foster care.
What's your recipe for change?
When I go to schools, I see young people who are embarrassed. They're so far behind that they're embarrassed. And so just even being in a classroom with their peers, when they're should be in 11th grade and they're maybe doing 9th grade and still don't understand, trying to figure out how do we make classrooms settings that make these young people comfortable, comfortable enough to ask teachers for help, comfortable to feel like I'm not the only person who doesn't get this math, that I haven't done math since I was in fifth grade and now I'm in ninth grade and I don't even know the basics of, you know, adding and subtracting, multiplication and division. And I think that's probably one of my, like, the biggest concerns I see is these young people, you can't expect them to go to school and go every day if they're not getting the work.
That's Jatane Hart. She's an academic mentor and a former foster young person. And Daniel Heimbel is also here. He's the director of Fostering Media Connections. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. So let's talk policy then.
Okay.
What's happening that's exciting, and how does the fact that we are cutting back on public services right now, we're at a time, you know, where we're cutting back on the caring services, on our teachers, on our public schools, on our public institutions, how does that factor in to policy change and to sort of implementing some of these things?
Well, I mean, the easy case is the financial case, right? So, I mean, that's the one that everybody likes to make because that's the way people speak in this day and age. I don't think it's necessarily the best case, but okay. I mean, you have the Perry preschool model, looks at children in early education in Michigan, and you extrapolate that 40 years down, and you see that every dollar you spent when they were little preschool kids, these aren't foster kids, but kids from a socioeconomically hurting area, you get a $17 return on investment for every dollar spent. Okay, so it's like not even a question that our economic investment in children pays off down the road. So
if you don't care as a moral imperative, you should just care as a bottom line.
Well, yeah, you should care as a bottom line. I think, I mean, it is the only bottom line that makes sense. So I think that focusing on children is clearly a good investment. But beyond that, I mean, what are we going to have? I just don't see it anymore. I mean, what are we going to have if we keep on investing in things that aren't our own people? Wars and these kind of things.
And what are kids telling you that they want? What are they saying that they need to be successful?
All of my kids actually say they want to go to school. They all say they want to go to school and that they want to do something. They want to go to college or they want to do this. And I think it's just really hard to get them motivated when no one's at home. I actually, last week, picked up a young woman from her foster home and drove her to school, dropped her off in her classroom, make sure she got there. And part of it was, you know, foster mom was already at work, and so no one was really being accountable. Is she going to school? And it's little things like that. They want someone to be held accountable, and no one's doing it. I mean, I am so inspired by the young people that I see that I work along with, my colleagues who grew up in foster care, who are brilliant. They're resilient. They have so much passion and are willing to change the world. And somebody planted a small seed for them, and they now are... They have taken it and grown so much, and myself included. I feel like somebody took the time to say, you know what, we believe in you and you're going to do something, and I'm here now, and I am so proud to say that I grew up in foster care and that I had that opportunity for people to, you know, to support me. And I wish that other young people have that support as well.